And everyone patiently waiting. This is the technician. Just to let you know that we just have muted the screen, so that's why it's gone black. We will be starting in about 15 minutes time. Thank you very much.
Association webinar. I acknowledge the Cammeraygal people who are the traditional custodians of this land on which this facility is situated. I would like to pay respects to the elders, both past and present, of the Cammeraygal, and extend that respect to other Aboriginal people present. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I hope you've had a really good day at school, and thank you so much for your enthusiastic response in joining our second webinar. The response last week was absolutely fabulous, and we had some very positive feedback. So thank you so much for joining us again. Today we're going to be looking at setting a summative and developing a summative assessment task. And my name is Sharon McLean. I'm one of the Vice Presidents of the Geography Teachers Association of New South Wales. I have been Head of Faculty for 10 years at St. Ignatius College, and I've taught in a variety of schools prior to coming to St. Ignatius College, and I have also been on the GTA for approximately 20 years now. I've been a convener for the Catholic Trial, and I have also marked school certificate and HSC. So you're very welcome. What we would like you to do now is to click the hands up icon, raise your hand icon up in the top left of your screen, and that gives us an indication that you're connected as well. Just give you a moment to do that. Okay, good. In the room, we're situated at St. Ignatius College today, and in the room is Adrian Hodder, who is our technician, and myself. Thanks, Adrian, for joining us. During the course of the presentation, if you would like to ask a question, you can go up to the Q&A button, and I'll probably stop about halfway through and look if there are any questions then and answer those, and then we can also look at them at the end. And if it's something that I can email back to you, we can do that as well. Okay, so I think we'll get underway. So looking at developing a summative assessment task. It's week 5 of term, and so you're probably thinking, particularly for your Year 12s, maybe developing a summative task during the trial exam, or you may be that part of a unit with Year 11s or Stage 4 and 5 students, where you're looking at getting an indication of where they're going with their learning at the moment. So in this webinar, it's running from start to finish, looking at how we set up the assessment schedules, notifications, using a mapping grid, and a little template called an exam builder that we like to use just to make the actual setting of the exam a lot easier. Looking at the sections of an exam, using the HSC format, which is also can be applied to Stage 4 and 5 as well. Multiple choice examples, short response examples using that hierarchy of directive terms, and extended responses. And we'll also take a look at how we can differentiate, particularly for Stage 4 and 5. We're going to be looking at marking guidelines and the criteria, the standards reference approach, proofing a paper, doing a multiple choice check, and checking numbers and stimulus material, and providing feedback to students and students engaging in their feedback. So hopefully we'll move through that today, and we'll particularly be looking at the importance of a summative task. So formative versus summative. And we know that the goal of a formative assessment is to monitor student learning. So we can use a variety of different instruments to do that. It can be just a short paragraph task. It might be some observations, that anecdotal observations that you're making on their work. It might be in a portfolio. And that helps you identify where the students need some specific help, and you can address those problems immediately. Formative assessments are generally low stakes. They may have an assessment waiting to them, but if it's a homework task or an in-class task, they're low stakes, which means they have a low or no point value. So there is just, it's a task that you can see where a student, individual student, needs specific help. When we're looking at a summative task, though, the goal is to evaluate the student learning. It may be at the end of the unit, and you are then comparing the student's mark against a standard or a benchmark. Summative assessments can be high stakes, particularly for our Year 12 students. So they have a high point value. And when tasks are high stakes, it makes it all the more important that they are well written, well structured. And every student has the opportunity to do their best and show their knowledge. So some summative task examples are midterm exams, like the ones that are coming up for Year 12. It might be a final project, a paper, a research paper. Or also, I think a pretest can be a summative task that may not be a high stake, but pretests can, particularly say for Year 7 students where you've got a number of feeder schools, it might be a useful thing to do a pretest so you can see what areas they have now covered in the stage 1, 2 and 3 geography syllabus, and you can get an idea of what they already know using a summative task. So there are a variety of uses. In the New South Wales Geography Syllabus, this diagram is from the assessment advice, and I think it's a really good way of looking at the types of assessment you're going to use. So what do we really need to know about what they're learning? What evidence is required? And how this evidence will be gathered? Is it going to be formative or summative? And if so, then once you've decided on that, what's the content, the learning experience, and how will feedback be provided? And we'll talk a little bit later about feedback. And do those tasks that you've developed, formative and summative, give sufficient evidence that students are achieving the learning? So for the new syllabus, summative tasks also play a role in the suite of all those different tasks that you can give to students that engage them and really help their learning. And then first of all, look at stage 6, because they are high stakes and it's important that we really are aware of the components, the assessment components and ratings. And for the preliminary course and the HSC course, these are specifically stated in the syllabus. And so when we're devising an assessment schedule, it needs to be very clear to the students which of these areas are going to be assessed and the weightings that you're giving to those. So for the Year 10 course, the preliminary and Year 12 course, right, knowledge and understanding, the geographical tools and skills, the geographical inquiry and research, including fieldwork, and communicating that information. Are all covered in the weightings. So here is an example of a HSC assessment schedule that I have used, and it's one from 2014-2015. So it's structured in a way that there are 5 tasks, and the Board of Studies says between 3 to 5 tasks ample for HSC students. So we have used 5 tasks, and over the from fourth term through to the end of term 3 of the HSC year. And you can see that the knowledge and understanding skills, geographic fieldwork, inquiry, research and fieldwork occur in different weightings across the tasks, but all then add to the weightings that are prescribed in the Board of Studies syllabus and in the assessment weightings there. So knowledge and understanding 40, and that knowledge and understanding is gathered from a number of tasks, as are skills and the inquiry and fieldwork and the communication on how they're going to display or show their knowledge. Okay, so we would give this assessment schedule right at the beginning of the HSC course, so they're aware of when to expect their tasks. Okay, so now it's coming up to the exam and giving an assessment notification. I'm just going to go out so I can go to one of my documents here. This is a HSC assessment notification that we have used. I was talking to a group of Year 11 boys today, and I said, what are things that are really important to you in the lead up to the exams? And the first thing they said is getting a notification in plenty of time. So they thought 2 to 3 weeks out was fair, but they really wanted it to specifically say, what was the format of the exam? What were the types of questions they were going to get? And give them an idea of what they had to learn, what were the syllabus going to cover, or what was the exam going to cover. So here's an assessment task, a notification for semester one exam that we would use. So it indicates the task weight, and it indicates the 2 topics for year 12 that we would be looking at. The outcomes that would be used in the assessment, the outcomes that we would be expecting to see, and also the actual nature of the tasks. So there's the exam structure, and it's in, I suppose it's really important for students that the exam reflects the HSC. It gives them an indication of what to expect. Following the same format gives them really good practice. So at this stage, you may not be doing a 3-hour exam, so there may not be the suite of extended responses or short answers, but as long as it follows the same format as the HSC, it gives them a really good experience. So in this one, we've outlined there's going to be section 1, 20 multiple choice, section 2, 4 short answers, and also indicated the content that they're going to be examined on, and also the extended responses. Now, we were, in this case, including a fieldwork-based task on urban places because they had done fieldwork earlier in the course. So we were specifically going to get them to use their fieldwork examples. And then we have also indicated some preparation and given a link to the online learning system. That you could include whatever it is at your school, where there might be some study guides or assistance there. So that's a year 12 notification. Now, this is a year 10 one, and it doesn't have as much information, but again, following the HSC format of a section 1, section 2 and section 3 and multiple choice short answers and an extended response, and this is a semester 2 notification. So this is for the previous syllabus, and so it indicates which topics we were going to be looking at, and we've specifically outlined those topics there for the students, and which references to their textbook they can go to, and we've also given them some hints on preparation and the outcomes we're looking at. You might notice in the E10 we've actually taken the outcomes from the top of the page, and we put them at the bottom, just to make it, to provide clarity at the top of the notification for the students. However, when we're looking at differentiating for students, we devised just a slight variation on an assessment task. So it's got the same information, but this is a little more structured at the top, giving them the information. It's not as compact, and it's exactly the same information on topics, though we have removed the outcomes from it just to decrease the text that's on that notification. So as to reduce that volume of text they've got to read through, and just to make it easier for them to access. So for stage 4 and 5, it's probably an idea for students, if you've got a real range of abilities, to look at differentiating the assessment tasks for them, so they also feel as though they can access the task. Okay. So there's some examples of notifications. Let me just reload in the presentation. Okay, we're back on again. My apologies for the delay in loading. Yeah. Okay. They're just the examples I went through with you. Okay. Once you've decided on the notification, then comes the setting part of the exam. And I've always found getting a plan for the exam is really useful. So we've always used a mapping grid. When we're setting, when I was convener for the Catholic trial, we also established a mapping grid. And you've probably seen these in the packages that NESA supplies for teachers on exams. So a mapping grid really enables you to have a look at the spread of the content that you're going to use. Some of you may have accessed this already. This is the new NESA site. And they're providing packs of syllabus papers now. So they've restructured it to make it easy to access. And this is for the 2015. And here we have the geography marking guidelines. And the assessment, the mapping grids for the HSC papers are contained in those marking guidelines packs. Okay, so just going to access that. For you. It's just the internet is slowly accessing. I won't be able to access the April HSC one, but this is a mapping grid that we use here. So you might be on your own teaching HSC geography, but if you have 2 or 3 people, you have a team of people setting an exam for stage 4 or 5, using a mapping grid is often a good way to make sure that you're going to get a distribution of skills and content. So then we would look at the areas of skills we cover, and then we would divide the skills into whether it's going to be graphs, synoptic charts, direction, gradient, area, distance, speed, time, but also to include some content, questions as well. And then we could say, well, if we're covering these in our multiple choice, what about our short responses and then our extended responses? And sometimes it might be working in reverse. You might decide on your extended responses and then work out what you need to cover for the short responses as well and work back that way. Then we would actually write down who was setting it. Once we had our mapping grid, then we would just go and check that we were covering all aspects of the topics covered to ensure it gave the students an opportunity to show what they know, that it just didn't focus on one narrow area, that it was going to give them a broad range of content where they could really show their knowledge. Once we decided then on who was going to set what, we use this, we call them the exam builder, and really it's just a template, a table template, where it sets up how to type in the multiple choice with the correct spacings. And so we would just have this generic template for the 20 questions and have a starter in there. So the question would be typed in here. We have our A, B's and C's and D's down here, and then typing the alternatives there. Because we might have a couple of people setting it, we found this was a good way to ensure the format was the same. And if you're the person who's responsible for putting the exam together, this could be shared on a Google Doc. And so the format remains the same and you're not getting different fonts, you're not getting different spacings. And so it's important for the students to get an exam that is well structured, it's really clear, well written, and the format is reflective of the HSC format. So we just call those exam builders. And we use the same for a short response here. So we leave a gap if there's going to be stimulus material. Here is where the question is asked, the mark value, and it's the second part of the question. Here is where the question is asked, and then set up the lines. It just having that template and that structure makes it easy to set up exams time after time. Okay, so multiple choices, they're always great to mark, aren't they? But they do take a long time to write and to write well. I checked back through all the HSC papers back to 2001, and in every multiple choice question, in every multiple choice, they are now always asked as a question. There are no unfinished statements. I had to go back to pre-2001 to find statements in HSC multiple choice questions. So there are a few things also to consider when writing a multiple choice question. When you're writing the alternatives, rank them in from smallest to largest, so increasing numerical order. As you can see in these two that are taken from the 2015 paper. Right, so increasing numerical order, it makes it easy for the students to cast their eyes down and they can see that rank value. Sometimes it makes it a little bit difficult that not all the answers then fall into to D option. So just being mindful that there is a spread of A, B, C's and D's as well. Okay. Now, this is the example of an unfinished statement, or the multiple choice requires a finished statement. So if you are going to use those in your stage 3 and 4, so it is an unfinished sentence, an incomplete sentence. So in this one, we can see that each option finishes with a full stop. So there are only small things, but they are important things in for clarity in writing a multiple choice question. Apologies here.
Muted there for a moment.
I apologise. We'll just mute for a moment until I can get back to my multiple choice screen. I do apologise. I've had a slow internet problem, and hopefully now we will. I'll leave the screen at this stage so we can hopefully still connect with you.
Your screen still pause. So.
Okay, we're resuming sharing. Okay, I've just got an example here of a multiple choice that is sort of poorly written and the other one that is much better. So which of the following is not safe for driving practice on icy roads? The better way to express that is allow all the following are safe driving practices on icy roads except. So that second multiple choice is just a better way of structuring it to help students come to the right answer. I've included a website about writing multiple choice questions there that maybe if you're new to teaching, you might like to have a look at so you can practice writing good multiple choice questions. Okay. Often there are multiple choice questions on glossary terms. And for our Year 12 students, there can be one, two, sometimes three questions in the HSC that really focus in on those glossary terms. So if we can get our students to really look at those, study them, practice them, ask each other quizzes, would be a great idea because it's an easy couple of marks to pick up. I've also included here a link to my Quizlet page. Some of you might be familiar with Quizlets, where you can set them up to for students to practice questions. And I've got a number of Quizlets there, and this one that I've got the link to is on the definitions and enables them to do flashcards and to test themselves, to do multiple choice on them. And Quizlet is just a fabulous piece of software that you can use for your students. They can put them on their phones and, you know, they can be travelling back and forth to school. And as I tell my students, you know, they can just have fun in while they're coming back and forth to school and practice their definitions. I don't know if they really do that, but there's a facility there for them to do that. HSC Online also has multiple choice questions, all the multiple choice questions that have been looked at in the HSC, and they can go online and practice. The other thing that we find particularly useful is ZipGrade. ZipGrade is an app that you can put on your iPad, phone, and you can create a multiple choice answer sheet that when the students use it, you can scan in using your iPad, you can scan in their answers, and it will give you data about their responses. So it is a little bit, takes a little bit of time. You can see on this animation how it works. It takes a little bit of time to set up. However, the feedback that you get is absolutely fabulous because it'll give you a breakdown, not only the student scores, but as you can see here, the ones they're getting right, ones they're getting wrong, and then it will give you a data analysis of each of those questions. So you can then say, think, okay, well, they've got difficulties with grading it or vertical exaggeration, and you can focus on those. So ZipGrader is a really useful piece of software. Okay. So we're going to be moving on to the short response questions now.
Sure, if you like, maybe it takes some time to do some Q&A, I can restart your computer for you.
Okay, yeah, that'd be really good. Okay, we've got some Q&A there.
Might be a good time to prompt some people as well.
We're just going to have a just pause for a moment so that we can have a look at some questions. And if you've got a question, okay. The first question we had, will this PowerPoint be available for us to view again later? Yes, it certainly will be. We will be putting this up on the GTA site so that you'll be able to access it from there. Okay. We're just going to be rebooting my computer so we can continue with the presentation. Okay. If you've got another question there, if you would like to send that through, and while we're doing this, I'd also like to remind you about the Geography Teachers Association conference that is going to be in Sydney in March, on the 9th and 10th of March. We have a large number of people who have already registered, both primary and secondary, and we're really very excited about the program that has been put together for that. So it's still not too late to register, so if you have an opportunity to do that, that would be fabulous. Okay. We certainly will aim to, as questions come through about when we're going to finish, we certainly will aim to finish by 5. I know a lot of people need to be out of their school by then for security reasons, and that's why we certainly will be finishing on time. I would really encourage you, when you're doing your assessment tasks, to use your networks. You're already working really hard, so if you can share tasks, share information, that would be really valuable for you, and getting a learning community going where you can share your information. So working together really does make a difference in terms of your workload as well. Okay, we're just getting reloaded now. We have another question. Here's a question here. Have we adopted any of the online apps for Extension Stage 5 students? No, I haven't done that as yet. Though if anyone else has had that experience, if you would like to message in for that, that'd be terrific, and we can share our experiences. I think it's probably through this facility. We can also, if you've had a topic that you're particularly working on and you found something that's been really useful for the new course, it'd be great if you could just pop that in and we can share that information with people as well. I know there's a lot of exciting things happening across the state with the new syllabus.
Just start the share again when you're ready.
Okay, I need to get back into Google Drive. Hello. We're back again. Okay. Now,
a couple of key questions as well.
Okay. We'll continue on and then we'll answer the other questions as they come through. I just want to talk quickly about differentiating in a multiple choice exam for year 10 students. Okay. So this was just a couple of simple things that we did to actually help students with accessing the questions. So you can see here on the left of your screen are basic skills questions for Year 10. On the right-hand side of the screen, to assist students access it, we really cut down the amount of language that was around the question. We highlighted key terms and we reduced the number of options for them. So then they could have an opportunity to complete the questions in the same amount of time. So just highlighting the key terms, which is not a bad thing to do for all the students, for all students, but reducing the number of options helps them access all the questions. Okay, section two in short answer responses. The hierarchy of directive terms is really important when developing short answer questions. So making sure that students can actually answer the question in the given time for those marks. So the higher order questions of evaluate, assess and analyse and explain are really appropriate for extended responses, although they have been used in short responses in the HSC on higher mark value questions. So the describe, outline, identify are very common in the HSC. Although the HSC review seminars have also indicated that the board of NESA in setting the exams is not going to slavishly follow those directive terms, that there will be the what and the how and the why as well, which still link back into the meaning of those directive terms. So making sure there's a distribution of those terms. We can see in the HSC for 2016 where these terms were used in question 24. There's an outline, identify and an identify. And these questions were just 2 marks each. So making sure that the directive term matches up to the actual value of the question. And for differentiating short responses, here is again a Year 10 question where the students were asked to refer to sources to answer a question worth 10 marks. With reference to the sources, describe the processes, impacts and management of urban growth in Sydney. So it's from that Year 10 unit on environmental issues. In a differentiated task, we actually scaffolded the answer for the students to help them access the question and structure their response so they would also have an opportunity to show their knowledge. So just breaking down the question into sections for them to help them categorise what they knew and to be clear about their response to each part of that question. So section three, extended responses. In writing those questions, the rubric is important to be there in your exams for the students. And I know we tell them you need to look at the rubric in case it changes, and we know they probably skim over it. But really the rubric is key in developing the marking criteria and the marking guidelines. So these rubrics translate straight across into the marking guidelines for the extended responses. So it's valuable for students to be really conscious of these when they're in the exam and making sure they're addressing each one of them. The questions just are discrete sentences, and we can see here, analyse, and explain. So they're those higher order directive terms. And developing vocabulary for students around those directive terms is really useful. So for explain, using the word because or as a result of, the cause and effect, making sure they have the vocabulary in their responses that shows they understand that directive term, and for analysing, showing the characteristics and the features and the links. So understanding the directive terms and the, giving them a list of words around those is very valuable. Okay, so Mark, now that you've written your exam, we're up to writing the marking guidelines and the criteria. And it's a standard reference approach. So we're marking each paper according to the standards that are set down in those rubrics. When I first started teaching a long time ago, I had a very experienced teacher who said, mark every student's paper as if it was your own child. And I know when we get bogged down in a number of number of piles of marking, sometimes it's a bit hard to think like that. But I think every student has put attempted to and to do their best, we hope, and we need to be able to make sure we are being very fair and helping them to get the marks that they deserve on that paper. So setting down the marking guidelines, it should go hand in hand with writing the question, what are we expecting the students to do? So here are the rubrics from the HSC exam, demonstrating geographical knowledge, communicating ideas, referring to case studies, illustrative examples, and the stimulus booklet where appropriate. I mean, that is so valuable. Markers, we get really excited at Marking Centre if we see students that refer to stimulus booklet material that links in to their response. So, and then presenting sustained and logical and cohesive response. So we can see in the marking criteria for question 25 in this 2015 HSC, again, the marking criteria reflects the rubric. So we can see shows a comprehensive understanding. Shows, again, comprehensive understanding on that particular topic, relevant case studies, illustrative examples, stimulus booklet, and then how it's communicated. Okay, so the marking criteria that you develop really is important to follow the HSC one for the student's benefit. Okay, once your paper is set, then proofing the paper. And often it's valuable if you can impose upon a colleague to swap papers. And often a non-geographer show it, get a different set of eyes across the paper. Because, you know, it's like you read a question so many times, make sure it's okay. And then the person who proofs it for you, they will pick up just minor changes that need to occur, whether it's a full stop or a comma or a spelling error. Just little things that will make that an error-free paper for your students. Check the multiple choice carefully. Check your stimulus material that it is all there. If you've photocopied a stimulus map, make sure the scale hasn't changed in the photocopying, that the grid references are still there, that it is all doable for students, and that the topographic maps are really clear for them. Check the numbers of your stimulus booklets. You know, just in case you might think you've got a pile of 25 stimulus booklets and someone's decided to borrow a couple and so the pile's a bit short, just making sure that it's all ready to go for the students. Also, I think invigilating, making sure that our students, it is fair for everyone that we are not just sitting in the room and doing our work or marking, that we are actually invigilating. There is a little bit of a humorous clip there, but given my internet was a bit slow, I don't think I'll risk going to that, but you might like to have a little look at it yourself as well. And I'm sure that across the state, we don't invigilate as they do in the clip. Okay, the students have sat the exam, it's all gone very smoothly, and it comes to feedback. And we know from Hattie and Templey's work, the power of feedback, how important that is. We really want students to improve. So they've had the learning experiences, we've assessed their learning. Now we would like them to reflect on their learning so they can then set new goals to lift their marks and improve their ranks. So, you know, feedback is about providing information to the students so they can identify specific things they need to improve on and they can improve on. And so effective feedback answers three questions. Where am I going? How am I going? Where to next? So we're feeding up, we're feeding back, and we're feeding forward. So feedback then works at the four levels. Okay? The task level, how well is the task being performed? The processes that the student has undertaken to perform the task, the self-monitoring, directing and regulating themselves, and then their personal evaluations. So one of Hattie's big items is feedback for students. And there are a number of feedback strategies that you can use. Okay, one that I like to use is when I'm marking their script, I actually don't put in marks on one of their extended responses. I write my comments and marks on the marking criteria, so each student gets a separate marking criteria sheet, so that when it comes time to feedback, I give them that extended response, I give them a copy of their marking criteria, and I ask them to mark it themselves. And if you've done this with students, you'll probably find they're a lot tougher on themselves than we are. They read through it and then they reflect on it, they look at the marking criteria, and I think that gives them a really good indication of their self-reflection and why that's important. And then proceed to give them their marking criteria so they can see what you thought of their paper. Or you can actually get them to swap papers and mark each other's as well. It's a very powerful way of providing feedback. Exemplars, providing best examples. You might have a small cohort at your school, but it would be good to make contact with schools in the surrounding area, perhaps swap exemplars or even swap marking as well to get a different view of where your students are at. Providing a markers report with the criteria, the suggested answers and exemplars can be very useful for students, something they can go back to. Some of you may have heard of Socrative. It's great for running quizzes, but it is a really good tool for self-assessment as well. So I'm just going to click on here and see if we can go to a Socrative example. Socrative enables you to set up a quiz to ask them about how they performed in the exam in the different sections, and asking them to identify what they really feel they need to work on. And that comes back to you in an email, and you can have a look at their responses. One thing I found Socrative really useful for is getting their reflections and then including those self-reflections in their reports. You know, for example, John, by his own admission, feels he needs to work on this, this, and this. So I think those self-reflections are really valuable, and then that becomes their goal for the next semester or the next unit of work. Or if they specifically say, I really need in the next extended response to work on my introductions or conclusions or making sure I cover the content, that they actually put that on their desk before that next task, if it's just an in-class practice, so they can refer to that and say, okay, I really need to focus on this and see if there's an improvement there. This can also be done with using Google Forms as well. Okay, so feedback strategies are particularly important. Okay. I'm just going to have to pause again to load onto the next. Um, Okay, I think we can, I'm going to leave it there for the moment and go on to Q&A because I can see that some time is elapsing and we need to finish. Adrian, I'm just going to ask, have you seen some other Q&As come up before my computer had to be rebooted? Okay, Adrian's just going to move the questions across to me now so I can answer those. Okay. Oh, great. Okay. Lorraine Chaffer is our president. Has said, Sharon, you might like to mention the proposed skills workshops later in the year and the HSC student lectures that many teachers attend as well, even if those students can't attend. So the GTA will be providing skills workshops as well, and also the HSC student lectures. And last year we were able to video those lectures and provide them to our members on our GTA website in the weeks just prior to the HSC exams, and many teachers found them particularly useful. So we'll have that facility available for you as well. I just have a question here. I'd like to know how the evidence base is here for that inclusion by his own admission example. I think maybe what you mean is I would discuss that with the student if there was an area that they needed to work on. I would just make sure that they're very clear on what their goal is, and then I can include that in my comments and the reports. I mean, here's a student's reflection on their work undoubtedly would be on things that we have noticed as well. Okay, so opening that up for a one-on-one discussion with the student is very useful too prior to writing their reports. Okay, just a few more questions. A comment about online Facebook groups. There are the Community of Geographers Facebook groups. There you might be able to get some ideas or post a comment, question, ask for some assistance there on those Geography Online face groups. They're fabulous. Another teacher has also volunteered some information about feedback. This teacher has volunteered that sometimes they give the exemplar first and then have the students redo the question to show their understanding. And that's a really valuable way to proceed as well, getting them to redo the question, but showing them the exemplar, because sometimes students don't know what they don't know. They don't know what an 18 looks like or a 20 looks like. So showing them the exemplar and without deflating them, getting them to read theirs is an opportunity to show where they can improve as well. Okay, that's a great idea. So thank you for that feedback. Look, I am really happy for you to send in some other ideas here if you've got some things that would help, particularly new teachers to geography. And sharing those on the community Facebook groups would be fabulous as well. Okay, so that's our webinar on developing a summative task. I do apologise for my computer. It was actually a computer problem, not the actual Zoom webinar system has been fabulous. But my computer wasn't in the game today. I do apologise, but I still hope you're able to glean some hints from that. And also I will put this up on the GTA website. If I could ask you now just to feed in that Q&A section, if you would like to feed in a couple of comments about the webinar, that would really help us. We would like to run webinars again next term. And the prime, we had a request for a primary one as well, and we would certainly like to offer that next term. We won't be doing any more webinars this term because we have a full dance card with the conference coming up, and so we would like to offer them in a second term and third term again. And if you have an idea for a webinar, we would really like to hear that from you as well. I particularly today, I would like to thank St Ignatius College and the IT team, particularly Brett Horton, the IT services director, and also Adrian Hodder, who's been here the whole time.